Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of the Liberty Squadron Podcast. My name's Andrew Lewinsky and I am joined this week with Jonathan Lee.
Hello everyone.
Marshall Staggs.
Hey everybody.
And Rob, wait a second. Rob got bountied.
Oh no.
So we are here with Brian Zhu.
Hello.
Brian bountied Rob. He beat him with a 150 point margin. So he is our guest host this week.
Wait, host? That's fantastic.
Well, yes, we're all hosts. You are our guest host, so there you go.
Everyone is a host.
We're all hosts. Aww. Equality.
We're all equal.
All right, so since Brian is here with us, we're not going to give him the traditional interview because no one wants to hear that. But Brian, why don't you give us your bounty report?
Oh, sure. So Rob and I were playing on stream, which is kind of nice, on round, I think, was it 4 out of 5 before the top cut. He didn't tell
this
me about the bounty
this
afterwards.
This was the group championship, right?
Yes,
oh, yes, the group championships.
Yeah. What was your list and his list, just briefly?
Rob's list was Boba Fett. I believe he had Dengar as the gunner, Marauder, of course, because everybody loves Cath Scarlet. I can't remember what else Boba had on him, or what his talent was. I think Trickshot, and I think he had some bombs, too. He also had Guri. Guri had advanced sensors, the title, and auto thrusters for as much boost as possible. I think stealth device? Yeah, stealth device. I was flying 3 Zealous Recruits, which are the PS1 Fang Fighters, and Drea Renthal. Drea Renthal was heavily stacked with Trick Shot, Dorsal Turret, Proton Torpedoes, Cloak Device, Hull Upgrade, Han Gunner, and R4 Astromech. So we set up. Rob obliged to fly straight at me. After making fun of some other people for flying straight at me, we set up asteroids in an equal sign, as in 3 along the edge of his deployment and 3 along the edge of my deployment edge, and then we flew straight at each other, and we explode.
So it was just a straight joust?
How many rounds was that game?
First one we moved, second turn we engaged at range 3, and Boba took 3 damage. No, that was turn 3. Turn 4, Boba died, and then around turn 6 or 7, Guri also died.
Okay. Nice.
So not the longest game.
Yes.
So you heard it.
Yeah, that's what happens when you joust, I guess.
Yeah.
It's the right decision for one person.
Those Fang Fighters dish out a ton of damage, and if you get them in range 1, it's kind of like it's even harder to hit them. I know.
Yeah, you can't kill them.
Me and Jonathan's game yesterday, like, it went to time, and how, like, one ship was off the table, and then maybe, like, 2 damage on 2 other ships. There's a.
That's because they ran away.
Yeah, you did, but
it's usually the correct strategy.
It was still like crazy to see all these games go to time, and then. So did he get any points on you, or did you completely table him?
He had half points on one of the Fang Fighters.
Nice.
So he got 22 points off of me.
All right. Well, there you have it. Rob got bountied, our first bounty, and welcome, Brian. You are now our guest host.
Is that a standing challenge? Is that.
Well,
this is not going away, right?
I mean,
for Rob, it's not.
Oh, for Rob, it's not.
Well, for Rob, it'll never go.
We all know that if you, I forget what's the bounty for you, that if you get tabled, that you have to buy them a Wawa hoagie.
Oh, after okay, so we have there are multiple bounties now.
Right.
Okay, that's
right. Yeah, we'll think of one for Jonathan by the end of the show. We'll think of one for Jonathan. Okay. So welcome, Brian. You got the whole episode to yourself now. What's next?
Yeah, all right, what do you want to talk about?
All right, so we don't have too much news this week. We got the previews all last week. Nothing new from FFG. So we do have some community-related things. Actually, we didn't put this in the show notes, but I believe it was 2 days ago. It was Monday that List Fortress was announced.
Yeah.
So this is Anti-Grapist's, I believe, project. That it's almost a new List juggler where you can export into List Fortress. And it gives you tournament results. And it seems to be working pretty well. I mean, it's still pretty infant, but it's giving us a ton of information.
Yeah, look, it's pretty slick. And it's bare bones, but it's got pretty much all the info you need. I don't know what else he could do. I'm sure he has other functionality planned for it. But as it stands right now, it's looking good.
Yeah, and it's this listfortress.com. But...
Oh, he did. I didn't even look at the URL. Okay, that's cool. That's not like a weird, complicated thing. Okay.
But right now it looks pretty smooth. Everyone knew that this information was going to be out there regardless if the FFG did not give it support. So it's a good thing to have this all in one place, and you don't have to actually go searching for it, because it will be in various sources, but now we actually have a valid source for all this. Mm-hmm. So check that out. Kudos.
You know, got- and also, as Alex said in, or Alex Rawback, Anti-Grapist, said in his Reddit post, if you're interested in helping him program, you can email him, or if you're interested in donating to the project money-wise, he has a link there, and it's in his post in Reddit.
That's cool.
Right. And he's the main Reddit moderator on the X-Wing, X-Wing Miniatures Game Reddit.
Next, we have the X-Wing Battle Report Archive. This is, I think, the coolest thing ever. If you are ever looking for just to watch videos of X-Wing matches, basically what it is a search engine that if you want to find like a video of an X-Wing match, like to kind of research like what you're flying, you can like type in a specific ship or pilot, and it will give you the results, like any video archives that it has, like on YouTube or various other sources, it will pull up the videos for that specific search. So right now it has a bunch of videos from the Crossroad Classic from Gold Squadron. But if you could go into, like, just click Scum and Villainy, type in what ships you want to see, and then it will do a search for you, and every ship that, or every video that has those ships, it will pull up, and then you can actually watch matches with those ships to, you know, further progress yourself and learn from that video itself.
It's so crazy. How does he get, I wonder if he goes through every video and just tags them for what ships. Yeah, I don't know. It's super impressive, and it's like,
some kind of crazy algorithm.
It's not something I knew that I wanted until I saw it. And then I was like, oh, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me. This is amazing.
I saw this and I was like, holy smokes. I was like, good job on that. Like, when I got that email, I was like, this is crazy. Like, you guys did a fantastic job on this. The website, we will post the website to our Facebook page and to our show notes. So it's like xba.azurewebsites.net. So we'll put the actual link in it for you, and I'm sure it will be posted around, but it's a tremendous resource if you're ever looking to watch matches or just catch up with the most recent tournaments. You can catch them all here.
It's all second edition games too.
You can filter it to second edition or first edition. One of the other, I just saw this, that it's got like X-Wing second edition on a Tabletop Simulator.
There are some Vassal games
too. Yeah,
there's Vassal replays. So yeah, I mean, there's 174 pages of X-Wing content. You can just watch X-Wing forever, which I might do.
Yeah, I remember. I mean, back in the old days, I remember when there were only like five like X-Wing matches you could watch online, and you just watch them over and over and over again. And then there's this one channel in Australia that had X-Wing, and I'd watch that. And there's just way too much.
I'm really interested in the tagging system, though, because beyond just ships, if we get to things like upgrades or other scenarios.
Yeah, I mean, he could, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how it depends on how he's doing it, but he could, if it's just him manually tagging stuff, he could tag it for whatever he wants to. Yeah,
I'd be interested to talk to him to see how he does this, but.
Maybe a community team, you know, like some websites, you know, like Twitter or Imgur will have tags for content and stuff like that. So, you know, many hands will make the work a lot lighter.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So definitely check that out. Bookmark it. Save it for later. I'm sure it's going to be your go-to source for seeing any kind of videos.
Oh, sure.
So we also had a couple tournaments go down this weekend. We had the Crossroad Classic. It looks like there was approximately 84 people there that we have in List Fortress now. So it was a top 16 cut, which is pretty decent. And the winning list was Alex Smittle with Finn Rao, Cavil, and two Jakku Gunrunners. We were talking about this earlier, but I really think Cavil is coming out to be the shining star in the scum at List building.
Yeah, we broke the points down. I might have been right before you jumped on, but he's like 50 something points with 54 points with dorsal R4 Han and the barrel roll thing.
Expert handling.
And you can put proton torpedoes on him if you want to or not, and I think either way, he's still good. But yeah, for 54 points, he's just a crazy cheap scum piece that I think you can slot into a lot of lists.
Yeah.
He can cloak for fun.
you could cloak. Sure. Why not?
Well, we'll get into that a little bit later, Ryan. I want to hear all about this. Yeah. So the runner up. Where did we go here?
Yeah, what else we got?
We're still trying to figure out this fortress. Sorry, guys.
Okay, it was Boba Fett, Palob, and Forlorn. So three ship scum, steal tokens, give stress. Yeah, pretty solid stuff.
Passive mods.
Yeah, lots of passive mods.
One of the things I like about this is it's so stripped down naked. Like, Boba Fett has Seismic Charges, Marauder, and Han Solo, where Palob just has the Multi-Crow title, and then Forlom has Elusive and Triple Zero. So it's like, this is still busting out a lot of damage for being, you see some lists that have, Upgrade Galore, and this maybe has, one or two upgrades on each piece, when they could potentially be stacked. Which, I think is going to be a very meta-defining thing, where you're just not going to see upgrades. As opposed to ships.
Yeah, I mean, you don't... Like, Nathan Idy came second in Swiss, and he had three Naked Scimitar Squadron pilots, Redline with Proton Torpedoes, and Whisper with Ruthless and Sloan. Like, you don't need to put a lot of stuff on your ships. We're not in that 1.0 mode anymore, where it's combo wombos and stuff.
I'm looking at this, and, where is the damage coming at from this three Scimitar Squadron pilots... Like, are they there basically just to throw up front and be triggered by Sloan?
Yeah, it's Sloan bait. You just let him die, and then, everything is double stressed, and Whisper and Redline can just clean up because nobody has any defensive mods. I mean, Redline has two focus target lock proton torpedo shots, and then you get to reload and just keep doing that. So that's where the damage comes from.
Yeah, true. We have one, two ship list that made the cut. It's Boba Fett with IG-88D, Contraband Cybernetics, Fearless Marauder, Proton Bombs, Han Solo, Gunner, and then IG-88A with Shield Upgrade, Advanced Sensors, Elusive, the Title, and Proton Bombs.
Mm-hmm.
So we were talking about this earlier in the chat, and I don't know, two ship lists just don't seem appealing right now. Like, someone was saying, why don't you do IG-88C with Boba Fett so Boba Fett can boost and then get the free evade. But then...
And then put Juke on Boba.
Right. And yeah. I just the damage output... Like, I've been messing around with the aggressors a lot, and I'm not seeing a good amount of, just overall damage output. They're tremendous at staying alive, but at the same time, they're hard to get pushed that damage through.
So you should watch the game that was on stream, because it was that list against Whisper, Rexler, and Soontir. And I don't know, there's something to be said for Boba Fett having three calculate tokens every turn.
What I'm curious about. Is Boba just this crazy workhorse now that is getting three calculate tokens and a focus token? You get what I'm saying? It's crazy that ship could almost be soloing, because IG-88A, if he's passing a token off, and his damage output is going to be suffering. What I'm getting at is Boba Fett this good that he could be soloing less with a support ship with IG-88A?
He could be. I mean, he can fly into the face of, he can fly into mini swarm, into multiple enemy jousters, survive, get behind them, drop a bomb, get behind them.
Yeah, most of the time. Rob did try that on me, but it works most of the time.
I mean,
30% of the time, it works every time.
I mean, at the group championship, I flew a two-ship list. I flew Lando and Luke, and I felt like every game was hard. You know, when, I flew against Zach, who had four B-wings and a Y-wing. Spent the whole time sort of running and running and running and sniping, and it was not easy.
Yeah, every list that I've kind of put on the table, it's like a minimum of three ship
But. Oh, and even yesterday, like with Rexler and Vader, I found like I had to be so. I flew Rexler and Vader at our game night the other night against Andrew, and you just have to be so careful when you only have two ships. You know, you can't trade shots, and you have to be really, really careful.
You have to pick your battle, yeah.
Yeah, and then something completely unrelated to what we're talking about, advanced sensors is really good on the defender. Probably too good.
Yeah.
It's probably too good. We could talk about that now or later.
we could talk about it a little bit later.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was crazy just being able to boost and then see where like go wherever you wanted to go with the defender. Any other crazy lists that stand out to you guys? You've been seeing... All right, so we'll talk about this a little bit later, but it's like Whisper is everywhere.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later for sure.
But what about the Echo?
Where's the...
Did Echo sneak into the car?
Echo?
Oh, yeah.
Echo Juke.
Echo Juke collision detector afterburners.
Yeah.
I'm kind of super into that list. It's Echo. Yeah, Echo Juke, Sloan, and four scimitars with barrage rock. Ugh. Yuck.
I don't know if this has been talked about at all anywhere else, but Darth Vader crew, like, why aren't, like, if you're taking Vermeil, why aren't you throwing Darth Vader on Vermeil?
Points. That's the only reason I can
think of. It's true, but it's like, you're basically, you're making them do a damage, and if they're not taking that damage, then Vermeil's changing his, getting his free hit from the having no tokens, basically.
Yeah, he's worth it.
Is he 12 points? Is that right?
13.
I think. Okay, but still, I'm going to have to throw that on the table of Vermeil and Vader.
I mean, I think looking at Cody Martell's Echo licks, I mean, like, Juke goes so well in the Phantom since they get that evade token when they decloak.
Mm.
Vader is great. The collision detector is amazing.
Yeah.
Being able to decloak through obstacles. And then that bendy, if you think about how good the bendy... barrel roll is on Star Vipers, you know, that bendy decloak on Echo lets you really sort of dodge arcs a lot better,
especially because collision detector, you could end up on a rock, spend a charge on collision detector, and then you can still fire on the rock. Am I right?
Yes.
Yeah, so that collision detector, I would say, has to be almost like stapled on these things. I mean, I know everyone wants to bring advanced sensors for them, but I think collision detector, like, just being able to ignore the entire field is tremendous.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
So,
yeah, but what about fire control and Krennic so that Phantoms can finally target lock again?
Stop it.
Yeah.
Phantoms target lock again.
Nope.
Well, I'm throwing Krennic on my Vermeil and Vader.
That sounds horrible. The worst, like, performance review ever for Krennic.
For Vermeil sweating bullets.
I think looking at this top 16 cut, also there were 5 scum lists and 11 empire lists. So,
yeah.
I don't know what's going on with that.
So, we don't have any rebel lists.
Yeah,
so.
I'm scrolling down really quick to see what the highest rebel list is. Okay, so the highest rebel list was
30?
24th, and it was Esegi. Atala Squadron pilot, Biggs, and Kyle Katarn. Nice. So who knows? Who knows what that's about?
The 5 scum lists that made it, 3 of them have Han Gunner. And then one was William Hagwood's Dreyas Swarm. And then the winner, Alex Smidalwood.
So it looks like points are going to go up on Han Gunner soon.
Jeez. Yeah, January is going to be a bloodbath.
are we certain that January is going to be the first...
I think that's when they're dropping the the hyperspace format or whatever.
That's what they said, of course.
They said that there was going to be a points adjustment that came along with that. It might be a points adjustment just for that format. I was unclear on exactly what points adjustment was being discussed, but there will be a points adjustment in effect for organized play, and I think. I'm assuming that it'll be pretty extensive.
Cool. That could be a beta test for the points too.
We could be beta testing right now. Like,
yeah.
For all we know, this game couldn't be like in its final form until like all 7 factions are out, and then they're just like, "Huh, jokes on you guys."
I kind of have a feeling that that's what's going to happen. Like, it will not be the same game come March, for sure.
This is going to be probably one of, like, the most interesting years in X-Wing in general, just with everything coming out and all these factions like assuming their identities, it's going to be really interesting to see.
I'm so happy.
It's a ton and ton of content that it's, we don't know what we're going to do with ourselves. And like, I think that's a good thing. But at the same time, you almost see a lot of these lists starting to form up a meta based on their, what am I trying to say? Like the modifiers, like you're seeing all these lists kind of transform around like modifiers with like Captain Jonas, Han Gunner, like as most modifiers you're getting, they're the ones that are rising to the top. And it's almost like, is FFG going to be okay with this, or are they going to actually balance these points out? And I guess we'll find that out in January.
We already like passive modifiers. They're easy.
What's that?
We like passive modifiers. They're easy.
We do like, yeah, exactly. But that's what I'm saying is that like you're seeing all these cream of the crop ships and pilots, you know, rising to the top. And it's almost like that's what people wanted to stay away from. Like, there's still so many ships that aren't seeing the table at all just because they're almost worthless. But
I mean, what, Andrew, what do you think is undercosted right now?
Undercosted?
Or overcosted?
Overcosted. Either. I'd have to look up the list. Put me on the spot like this.
Can I start with one?
Yeah, go ahead.
Be kind of obvious. So the TIE Aggressor. Have not seen a TIE Aggressor flown like anywhere.
You know what's funny is I saw one last night.
Like there's a TIE Aggressor?
But yeah, the TIE Aggressor, I would say maybe.
It costs more than the TIE Bomber. Has like one less hit than it. Its dial is strictly worse, and it can't take munitions. It can take a turret. That's about it.
Yeah, it's like the Jumpmaster and the Scum Falcon. It's like, what were they thinking? Like it's not even comparable. It's an objectively worse ship.
I mean, so the Seeks, Sarasu, I would say, is overcosted. He's got a great ability, which, so maybe his cost is appropriate. But let's see, what the E-Wings, I would say, are overcosted.
No, just wait for Nathan Aid to break Cornhorn again.
That's true. We know this. I mean, I don't think we've seen a Sheathapede on the table since.
Good.
Five
was at Spanish Nationals.
Then. He was. We'll get into that. But, like, okay, so Fenn, 50 points. Is that too much? I mean,
I think it's too much.
I don't know if we'll ever see a K-Wing on the table.
There's a thing, though, like in a meta where we don't have everybody target locking, focusing for free every turn, I don't think Fenn Rao's Sheathapede ability is that valuable to have to turn off all of them because they're less prevalent.
But that's very true.
Yeah, and there are less dice mods for him to shut down, yeah.
So, but because of that, he might be overcosted at this point. Like, maybe at this point in the meta, he doesn't need to be that high.
I mean, like, I feel like some of the, I have nothing against TIE Bombers, but I feel like, I think, like, ships should have, like, their identity, and, like, a TIE Bomber should bomb, and, like, a gunboat should, like, fire missiles, and, like, zoom, and, like, fire rockets and stuff, so
yeah,
I feel like things could use some tweaking there.
That, like, okay, so like we don't really have any great cannons out for the gunboats, so they're kind of, and I have a feeling that we might see some better cannons come out soon.
The reason you don't see gunboats is because there's nothing to put
right
on them.
You can
put barrage rockets on them, but that it's a non-bow with their two configurations.
And so, the only time I seen gunboats on the table was because Owen didn't have enough bombers to bring. Like, he physically was just like, well, I'm bringing the gunboat because I only have three bombers. And
yeah, it's a more expensive bomber.
So it's kind of like, maybe it will shake out a little bit. Maybe not. You know, the other thing is that we're not even considering is that this hyperspace format, they might just completely axe out bombers and, you know, say, okay, well, bombers are out, but gunboats are legal. Mm-hmm. So we have to think about that.
We don't know what kind of crazy ship combinations they're going to give us for each faction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or free upgrades like Coruscant.
Yeah, I'm almost curious. I don't think they would.
That'd be interesting, yeah.
I don't think they would do this, but I would be surprised if like maybe they do like a separate point system where something costs 1 point more in extended than it does in hyperspace. But
yeah, it's possible. I mean, that's the point of the app.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, they did say that, like, I could have swore I heard them say in, like, beginning talks that some ships might be costed differently, like the upgrades, based on the ship. And that might have just been the scaling upgrades, like the stealth devices and stuff like that. It would be interesting to see that, like, let's say HLC, something like HLC gets a full front arc if it was costing more on, like, a ship that would greatly benefit from it. All right, well, moving on. We had Spanish Nationals happen this week as well. We had the top list by Sergio Alvarez flying Suntir with Whisper and Kagi. We don't have the full list. We just know that who was in it. Then the
we can guess what that list is. It's pretty obvious.
Right. And then we have Benoit Piccolo with Boba, Tarok, and I believe it's supposed to be Guri. I don't even know if that fits. I think it does.
If everything is kind of stripped down,
right?
You can get Guri in there, yeah.
What else do we have here? Anything crazy in the top eight?
Number three is
a rebel list.
Oh, right. Yeah, who we do have
crazy. There's a rebel list. That's true. Yeah,
we have
number three is Wedge Luke Sabine AP5.
Our first she the Pete sighting.
See, that's... Yeah, there's nothing super surprising. There's a lot of three ship Imperial. There's like a couple three or four ship scum lists. There's like an Inferno TIE Swarm. Yeah, that's so. Iodor is Howl Runner. Is that what we figured out?
It says Howler in Spanish. Howler, I believe the translation.
Howler Monkey. Okay, so it's Howl Runner, Iden, Sane, Delmico, Night Beast, and Wampa. So that's interesting. That's
Bestia
kind of cool
Nocturna.
Yeah, Bestia Nocturna.
Nice.
Pretty cool.
There's actually another AP5 down here at 2021.
All right.
They like that.
See, list number 14. Genesis Red.
Oh, wow.
Tad Solus, Palob, and the Outer Rim Pioneer.
Yeah.
Cool.
That is, right. I don't understand.
I don't understand.
That does not feel like 200 points.
I don't know. Palob gets expensive.
Expensive. You can load up that Falcon.
But isn't that just is the Outer Rim Pioneer? Isn't that the
That's the escape pod.
Is it the escape pod?
Yeah, I think so.
Hold up.
I think it's the generic escape pod.
The cheapest one doesn't explode.
It's the freighter captain.
Yeah, that's right. Freighter captain is the YT proper. Yeah.
I don't think he had to have everything loaded up on them. I mean, you could probably Genesis Red. You can throw some torps on.
Cad Solus probably gets up to 50-ish points.
Yeah.
I like to run around 53 with elusive because then he'll K-turn, get red, get two focus, recharge elusive, efficient.
Yeah, okay. All right, that's tricksy. I'm kind of into that.
So we got a lot of Coggies, actually, in this top 10.
Yeah, but what about that Dre Renthal, two quads and four Zs?
Oh, that's so good.
What about it?
It's the only seven ship list here.
It's crazy, yeah.
Hold on, what spot is that?
It's 18. Is that the same as William Haygood's? No, just William Haygood had...
He had two quads, three Zs, and L337 in the escape craft.
I was actually looking at this Drea Renthal list not too long ago. I went out and made sure I had enough quad jumpers to fulfill it. I have four quad jumpers now, but yeah.
Just wait for them not to be in hyperspace.
Right, exactly. Or they'll shoot their points up and be like, oh, well, joke's on me. I bought all the quad jumpers. All right, so we got some interesting things coming out here of Spain. But it looks almost the same, like a Boba Tarok Guri list that wins it. We got Han Nim Palob up there. Actually, that is interesting. That's the first time we're seeing a Skurg.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Boba didn't win. Suntir, Whisper, Kagi win. Again, more Whispers. But we don't have too much because, like I said, we don't have the actual list, just the pilots.
Yeah, but I think... At this point, we're starting to see which pilots are good. And I think, with the exception of Boba, who has a couple different things, like combinations of upgrades you can throw on him, I think we're starting to get a picture of what the standard builds for a lot of the popular pilots are.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think even without the upgrades, I think we know what's going on here.
Right, and it's funny because, like, we're seeing a lot of these PS5... like aces, basically. Like, you have Boba, you have Whisper, you have Luke, and you're seeing them a lot more than you're actually seeing like the PS6. Like, you're still seeing Fenn pop up every once in a while, but I don't think we've really seen Vader so much. Like, it's almost like PS5 is the way to go right now.
yeah, maybe Vader, maybe, I don't know, maybe people are having a problem with the stuff you have to build the list around with Vader in it, because he is, I mean, he gets close to being half your list. I mean, Soontir's all over the place, but that's because he's 52 points or whatever. Yeah, I think maybe it's PS5, because people are still trying to make Wedge work, but I don't think he actually does. I think that's about, and then Fen Rao, but that's really about it for I-6 pilots who even come close to being viable.
Vader crew being so good you could put Whisper Vader crew, and that's cheaper than Vader. So certainly no settings of Han and the Rebel Han or Dengar.
Vader's pilot isn't that special, because you too can have the Force.
So what are the other PS5s? We got Guri. Guri's like unstoppable right now.
Luke Guri, old Tarok.
Redline.
Redline.
Cavil.
Talon Bane Cobra.
I really want to I want to mess around with the Q-Rexes more, but...
Stop it.
Graz the Hunter.
Graz. I tried just there out a little bit ago, but with the way bombs work now, it just doesn't work the same way. And I got sad. But...
Yeah, he's not as...
Yeah, people are like, I can see this coming from a mile away, and I know exactly what to do. I
tried Graz a bunch. He's fun. Just fly him in a completely different direction. Either they all face Graz, or Graz gets his ability off on everyone.
Okay, I can see that. He's 40. He's 47.
I mean, he's a lot. His ability is a lot better than it was in first edition.
Oh yeah, in first edition he was like a poor man's Garvin Dreyas or whatever.
No, it's a poor man's Fen. If you're facing the guy, you get an extra green dice.
Yeah, if you're in there.
Oh, is that what it was?
I haven't even looked at this yet. It says while you defend, if you are behind the attacker, roll one additional defense dice. And then if you are behind attacking, you roll one additional. So that's interesting.
He could be a good flanker, I guess.
Give him Trick Shot. It gets really funny really fast. I did that to Trevor in one of our practice games.
One of the things about these Q-Raxes is that it's like they have three mod slots, but it's like there's nothing I want to put on them.
Yeah,
like, munitions failsafe. Okay,
you don't have to use every slot. Just don't bother.
There's not even like one modification. Like maybe afterburners, but it's like eight points.
Come on. Give it about a year, and they'll probably give like some broken combo.
Are five of them good, or are five of them okay? Because you can fit five, right?
Are five X-Wings good?
You can't fit five X-Wings, would be illegal.
It's a six-hole ship that can one hard. It's okay.
It seems like it wouldn't be bad, but I think if you're... I don't know. I think there are better swarm options if you're flying scum. Can you get... You can't get four of them in Drea, can you?
Maybe.
No.
Is Drea more than 40 points?
You need to give her a turret.
She's
like 40 something. Turret, yeah. And she has 40 and change.
So she'd be 44. So can you do Drea, three Kiraxes, and...
I did a tug.
I don't know. Could be a thing. There are a lot of cheap ships you can throw in there.
I mean, how many tugs can you fit with just Drea? That's what we need. Five tugs in Drea. Like, that should be... I need to go out and buy another quad jumper is what I just heard.
Are you saying you already have four quads?
Yes.
Wait, are you serious?
Yes.
We need to have a talk.
Well, it's funny because I had two, and then I heard about how good they were, and I was like, let me go buy another one, and then I was like, oh, well, maybe I need one more before they sell out, and then we can't find anything anymore.
That's right, Andrew. Yeah. They might be out of print for a while.
What's that?
Put Dead Man Switch on all those tugboats. That's your next list.
Yeah, that should be fun. Can you tractor beam your own ship?
Yes.
With that ability?
Yes.
No.
You pick a ship, right? You just you can tractor beam whatever you want. You choose a ship in your arc at range one.
Well, maybe I need to remember the old Nim with the Dead Man's Ease. This could be the new thing. Just blow up my own quad jumpers.
Someone at Champs flew Dengar. And a bunch of Z's with Deadman switches.
Oh
and
my god!
You attacked your own Z.
No, wait. Brian. Okay, so Brian. So Brian brought Dengar with a bunch of Deadman Z's and then R5TK. I tried so hard to talk him out of this list, and he was like, "No, I'm doing it." But I'm curious to see how many times he actually shot his own list just to blow it up.
My guess is
too many.
Twice in the entire tournament. That
too worked many is the correct answer. Well, but yeah. As long as he had fun, that's okay. So he actually, I think he went 2-3. So
you're seeing there's a chance.
There is a chance. So we're seeing a good meta shakeout right now. Like, it looks like these PS5 ships, like Whisper and all them, are seeing a ton of play. And I'm curious to see how FFG responds to this. But again, like I said, we're seeing the same old ships back to back. And I'm not sure if that's just the overall efficiency of these ships. Like, obviously, Redline getting two actions is tremendous. I'm not really seeing Whisper yet. Just the fact that it's so hard to hit her. But, and like I said, we talked about Boba a little bit ago, him being this crazy tank that can almost solo an entire list just by himself with the support ship is crazy. But we are seeing this meta shake out, and like, we actually have the evidence now with List Fortress and all these other resources. It's going to be interesting to see what the next wave brings and how that is going to like transform things.
Yeah, I think by the time PAX comes around, we will know what's up.
I mean, it is interesting how we can theory craft and then assume things are good. And then when you actually see the results, you could be sort of surprised. Like, I mean, speaking of I-5, I realize, you know, an I-5 pilot we don't see really very much at all is Nora.
Yeah.
You know, and people had talked a lot about Nora being really good, and you don't really see Nora in these top results. And then also the absence of TIE Swarms. And we've been talking, or people have been talking for a long time about how good TIE Swarms are going
to
be.
I was scared to death of TIE Swarms. I thought it was going to be Swarms all the way down, and it just didn't. That's just not panning out for whatever reason. I mean, people have a lot of theories, but
right.
Well, it's impossible to know who's right about why Swarms aren't showing up everywhere, but they're not, and I think that's fascinating.
There's such a high skill ceiling.
Yeah.
Nothing against the X-Wing community, but we're not, like, probably the best miniatures games out there. Or, sorry, the best miniatures game players out there. You know what I mean? There has to be somebody out there who's, like, better at strategizing than all the people who play X-Wing right now. But they're doing stuff that, I don't know, gets more attention. And we're having fun with Star Wars.
that does make total sense. Like, I've thought about that. Like, how many people in this world have, like just chess players that probably could pick up this game and just be like, they see the matrix of everything and could be able to pick up like these high, you know, ceiling lists and high skill lists and just be like crazy at them. But the swarms, like every list that I like was creating prior to release, like involved some kind of swarm counter. Like I had blockers in there. Like I was like taking a PS1 Falcon with a huge bid just so I could slam it in there and try to like mess up their swarm. And then I don't even think I've seen a swarm yet, like going up against one. But
nope, not a TIE swarm.
Yeah, I mean we've seen bomber swarms, but I mean it's a very different beast.
So I want to see more Trainer swarms. I want to see us fly William Hagwood's flag.
Mirror match would be crazy.
The longest game of X-Wing ever.
That was my favorite Coruscant Invitational replay to watch, was William Hagwood versus Blair
Bunky.
Yeah. Oh, 7, there were 14 ships on the board. They didn't even kill half by the time was called.
I bet they played like 6 rounds.
But I think that's also good for the game, because we don't want to see, you know, all these games left unfinished. I guess it's up to like design choice, but I don't think a lot of us appreciate that. But I don't know what the public thinks in general.
Well, I feel like my games more often than not go to time.
Yeah.
I don't know about you guys, but I feel like my games are either somebody, like ships don't die and start dying until like minute 60 and then everything dies super fast, or things start to die right as it hits time and then we don't finish the game. Like I haven't had a game that ended after like 40 minutes.
So one of the things I've kind of noticed was a lot of my games have been going to time. I think there at the group championship, there was only one game that did not go to time. And it almost seems a little demoralizing, the fact that we have this format where it is almost like a deathmatch. Like, the objective is to destroy as many points as your other opponent's ships, but they made it almost so hard to do that at this point. Like,
well, I think the unintended consequence of getting rid of a lot of dice modification is that, like, yeah, defensive dice modifications are worse, but offensive dice modifications are just as bad. So it kind of balanced out.
Right. And you're almost playing like a completely different game at this point, like, where now it's like this huge, like, before you could be like, okay, well, I need to figure out how many points each of my opponent's ships cost. And then I have to, like, figure out how many half points of the large base that cost and so on. And now it's like, you need to know how many points each of your individual ships cost, the half points of that, and vice versa for your opponent. And then it's almost like you have to think of this entire different strategy in your head to be like, because, like I said, like, almost all my games have gone to time, with the exception of a few, and it becomes like this real tight match where you think that you could be winning, but it turns out that you get that half points in that one ship and everything could be completely, like, defunct. And I'm not sure how I feel about it completely yet, but it's a completely different game. I'll say that.
Counterpoint?
Yep.
Rob only lasts like 20 minutes against me.
Touche. I mean, I'm not going to lie. There are still some of those, like, very heavy. Well, okay. So going back to that conversation, you guys slammed basically right into each other, but
yeah, I would, based on the description of that game, it sounds like both of you made the wrong tactical decision.
Well, like, one obviously did it.
Well, yeah, obviously, somebody won out. But
so yeah, looking
seems like neither of those lists should have jashed, or I don't know, but
looking
I feel
back,
like that is an atypical game of X-Wing. Not that that's a value judgment about that game, but most of my games have not. I haven't been in that situation yet in 2.0.
Not to, like, bash Rob or his list or anything, but I mean, if you're going up looking at the defensive modifications that the Fang Fighters get at range one and the rerolls that they are getting, it's kind of like, I can see why Boba got mopped up real quick.
Yeah, I don't know if I joust with Boba in that. I think I kind of skirt and, like, try to pick someone off. I don't know.
Yeah, I think I would try to. Especially because he probably, I don't know. Sorry, Rob, I think that was just a bad call. Like, I mean, he saw which side he lined up on and you went across the board.
Well, I know firsthand that Rob is not a bad player. So
right, exactly.
I'm sure he had an idea in his head of what he was
doing. He might have been burnt out or something, or he was just knew
we're
he
just
was
underestimated.
Yeah, I mean, he wouldn't have known he was already in the cut, but... Or it could have been he underestimated or anything.
It's a brand new meta. It would be insane to memorize every, you know, list type and show up and immediately know what to do against it.
Yeah.
I mean, I always underestimate that kind of shit, too. I'm like, oh, no, I can do this. I'll totally get away with it. I'll take a few points of damage. It'll be fine. Whatever. But I'll get the upper hand. And it usually does not work out that way. So.
But usually for higher path skills with reposition abilities, you know, you can fly around people.
Yeah, I don't want to be set
so
up in
fly behind him.
Some kind of kill box, that's for sure. All right, well, why don't we move this episode along? We've been on this subject a bit. We're going to go into, let's put, like, some time on the clock. We'll go 10 minutes into this. We wanted to talk about, like, some tournament etiquette. We have some big tournaments coming up. We have some new players getting back into the game or just joining the game in general. But, Marshall, did you type a lot of these? You want to take some of these?
Yeah, I these are not, like, in any particular order, but there were just, like, a couple things that I thought of when I figured out that we were going to talk about this, or that, like, we decided we were going to talk about this. I think it goes without saying to, like, not be an asshole, I think, just generally. And the X-Wing community is pretty good about that. Like, I've never had a game of X-Wing at a tournament against someone who was, like, a bad sport or, like, a sore loser. Like, maybe with one or two notable exceptions, but I think generally that's not a problem in this community. But so I'm not gonna harp on that. Like, if you're that kind of person, you know who you are, and I don't know. I can't do anything for you. But they're just like some good tips, I think. Like, part of it's like tournament prep, but also it's prep specifically to not put your opponent in a tough situation. So the things that I thought of were like, bring two copies of your list, like one for the tournament organizer and one to like carry around with you and show your opponents, because your opponent can like come around to your side of the table and look at what you have on all your cards and read all your cards. But if you have your cards stacked in a weird way, or like they're kind of shuffled up or like not fully spread out yet, like your opponent might miss something. So just hand them a copy of your list, like, so they can look at it and at least know what cards you have. So it's not like halfway through the game, it's like, okay, so I'm going to use my ion cannon on this guy. And it's like, oh, what, you have an ion cannon? Like, prove it. And then that's like a situation you don't want to be in. So
one of the things,
just make sure you have a copy of your list and you make it available to your opponent.
Right. One of the things I want to touch up on this is with, make sure when you bring a copy of your list that you have the points and the half points.
Yes, that's super important.
Because if I ask you how many points something is and you're like, oh, well, I think it's good, I'm not going to believe you. Like, I need to know, because if you're going to say, I think, like, no, that doesn't cut it. Like, we're in, like, we just had this talk a second ago about different points and how the game has changed, that everything is half points. Make sure you have a list that has half points of each of your ships on there. I mean, you could do the printouts from the FFG.
Just print it out from the app.
It's exactly.
Not all the information, it's all on there. I know the app sucks, but
even if you just carry that, for a reason, that PDF, and then show them like on your phone. But if you're going off of memory, like, that's not acceptable, I would say. Especially in like high level tournaments, like you need to have that completely figured out.
Right. Okay, yeah. So my second thing would be to know your list, including the FAQ about the cards in your list. We don't have a FAQ yet, so this is not a problem in 2.0 thus far. But I remember a lot of times in 1.0, something would change, and there would be people who maybe hadn't been playing the game for that long, or people who had taken a break and then come back and not known that a card in their list does like a radically different thing now. Before you go to any tournament, but especially a major tournament, just check the FAQ. Just make sure that you have an understanding of how all the cards in your list interact. Because as someone who's been on the other side of that, like, it super sucks to have to explain to your opponent that the list they brought doesn't actually do the thing that they do, that they think it does. And it's shitty to like be a know-it-all and give them a, well, actually, while you push your glasses up the bridge of your nose. But it's just make sure you know how your list works. Because then this goes into my third point, like, because then you have to call a judge and the judge has to come over and explain it. And like, judges can do that, but that's not really what, I mean, that is what they're there for, is to clear up rules disputes, but that's stuff that's easily accessible information. To my third point,
I was going to touch up on the judge calling.
Oh yeah. So yeah, my third point would be to just, if there's ever any confusion about anything, just call a judge. Ideally, like, it's not something about your list. Like I said, like, try to know what your list does. But if there's like a ship gets bumped and you feel weird about putting it back where it was, or if there's like a range call or an arc call, just call a judge. Great. That's what they're there for.
That's another thing. Like, if, especially when you get to like the higher level tables, when you know that there's stuff on the line, like cuts and everything, you should probably be calling a judge for any bump or like difficult maneuver, or even like just very close range checks. Like, that's what the judges are there for. When we had the group championship, I had the opportunity to talk a bit with Peter Fu, and he was saying that the judges should literally be like, any like overlapping or anything like that, that should be done by like a judge and like exactly that's what they are there for, is that they're trained to do that and they know what they're doing, and they will have the final like say of where like those ships land or if you're in arc or not. And so there really isn't a discrepancy to be like, okay, well, you know, you're not just hovering the template over and be like, okay, well, I think it's going to end up here. Like, the sloppy play shouldn't be a matter, especially that high up.
I mean, sometimes, like, the right thing to do is just, let's not touch anything, let's call the judge.
Yeah.
Because if we touch something, we'll move something, and then the judge won't be able to say one way or the other if that rock was there or not or whatever.
Right, I mean, you can definitely, like, assist by, like, holding things down and everything like that, but I think those close calls and those, like, crazy... like, obviously, like, if it's just, like, you're sliding something forward, that's one thing. But if, like, you're moving between two ships and you're not sure if it's going to overlap, or you have to, like, proxy, like, two or three things, or not proxy, but mark two or three things, like, that's something, especially, like I said, in cuts and stuff that, like, are in, like, the top tables, should definitely be done by a judge.
Yeah, you don't want to fudge that stuff.
I mean, if you're doing, like, a store kit tournament, like, I mean, you can always still ask a judge, but, like I said, like, bigger things, you should always be calling a judge for that stuff.
Sometimes leave X-Wing surgery to the professionals.
Yeah. You wouldn't believe how many times, like, someone will, like, pick up the ship and be like, I think it ends here, and I'm like, well, it doesn't, but now the game state's completely broken that we can't fix it. Like, hesitate, take the time. And the other thing about calling a judge is you can always ask for extra time too when stuff like this happens. Like,
oh yeah, that's a thing that people always forget,
right?
Is that judges will add time to the end of your, if a judge call takes a particularly long time, or if they have to go look something up in the rules reference,
right? Or even if it's just going to take them like extra time to actually move all the ships around, like the if you ask them for extra time, they will probably tack on a couple extra minutes to your game, depending on what the situation was.
And a nice thing to do, I usually have to bring one base extra of every size, so that, you know, if you think it's, oh, we don't need to call a judge because we can be precise enough for our game right here, and you want to measure where something lands to see if it fits, you know, an extra base handy is a good way of, you know, measuring that when it's actually time for that ship to move.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Anything else on judge calls you want to touch up on?
No, I think that was it. Just don't be afraid to call a judge.
Yeah. That's
my thing. I don't want to talk about damage decks really quick, and then I'll tell my little story. I have a story.
I know none of our listeners would tamper with their own damage deck, but always let your opponent cut your damage deck.
I hope none of us.
Yeah, it's it's something I'm like rarely presented with the opportunity to do, and I always forget to offer it. But yeah, that's always.
I mean, I would just let them, even if like you have it sleeves, give it a quick shuffle. Offer it. I mean, you want to be as honest as possible, but until Kylo came out, I'm curious how many people actually, I'm not saying anyone would, but stack their deck with different damage cards.
So like 2 or 3 years ago at one of our group championships, we had to count, I counted my damage deck and all my direct hits were on the top. And then I had a proton bomb go off and kill multiple ships, like, bam.
Never tell me the odds.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well. Okay. So, like, if you've never been to a like premier level tournament, before you get there, you know, one of the things you should do is make sure you have everything first off. But then, the first thing they're going to ask you is have your opponent count your damage deck. So that's another thing you want to make sure that you do, is that your damage deck has the 32 cards in it and.
33.
Well,
33. Oh, 33. I'm sorry, right? Oop. Well, it looks like my damage card. But yeah, the other thing that I'm curious if they're going to make us check this is, now that those damage cards have the pips on the bottom, if they'll actually make us, like, you know, check the pips to make sure that there are 4 fuel leaks, the 5 direct hits, and 2 of everything maybe. Else.
It's a little easier to do that now, yeah.
You know, well, I guess
it was easy before too, because it was just 2 of everything else and then 7 direct hits. But yeah.
But now that we have the pips, it might be a lot easier to check.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. Check my damage deck. I don't care.
All right, Marshall, this one's yours.
Okay, so in back in March, I went up to the Boston area for their regional. It was like one of the last regionals of the season, And it was like a long drive in the morning, and I had like eaten too much lunch and I was exhausted, and it was round six. And the person I got paired with, the smell was unimaginable. It would be profane to try to describe the smell that this person was emanating in like a 4-foot bubble around them. To the point where like the game was so unpleasant that I like stopped playing X-Wing for 4 months is pretty much what happened.
Oh,
like,
it was that and not 1.0.
It may have been a little of both, but I think that was, it was like, I walked away from that game, like, so just
all
the negative feelings. Like I felt like it was a very good summary of the place that 1.0 had gotten to, where I walked away from a game literally feeling like shit. So it's kind of a weird, like, dumb cliche about gamers, but just take a shower. Like, make sure you, like, carry deodorant around if you have to. Just be like a decent person. Like, if you're standing around at a con all day, like, you're gonna get kind of gross. Like, just be aware of
peers, yeah.
The sensory output that you're making, I guess. to put it politely, just be aware of your presence.
Don't be that guy.
Yeah, just don't be that guy. Exactly. That's the perfect way to put it. Don't be that guy.
All right. Don't leverage smell as a tactical advantage.
You know, maybe some people will take this to the, will try to take advantage of this now.
Yeah. And it was something I had always thought was like a dumb cliche until I experienced it, and then I was,
yeah,
it changed my perspective.
I played a bunch of Warhammer 40k and Magic, and I can say that X-Wing are the best smelling players of all the games mentioned.
That's good to know. We're starting from a good baseline. That's nice.
So there you go, Marshall.
Not this year, but last year's Nova in the swag bag, deodorant was included.
That's awesome. Oh. I love it.
Nice. That's a sponsorship.
Yeah.
Nice.
Get that Old Spice money.
All right. Well, let's move this along. Then we jumping into a similar topic. We have our big event coming up, PAX Unplugged. We have our first system open of the second edition tournament phase.
Season, I guess.
Season. There we go.
Yeah.
So, I was like, wait, what do I call this? Yeah, season. So it is the first thing. Well, we know a couple things about it. It is definitely going to be extended format. So everything is go. Like, there's going to be no points adjustments that we know of. Everything in the conversion kits is legal.
We might have wave two.
On a side note, has anyone ever seen, like, any non-extended events?
So we know that at Coruscant, they said in January that there are going to start a hyperspace format, that it's going to be, like, a rotating, like, lists. So there are only going to be certain lists in that format, like certain ships in that format. And it's going to be like almost like a similar setup to like a lot of these card games where like there is a rotation of ships in and out. So,
and we are doing a second edition tournament on Sunday, October 28th at Showcase.
Yep.
So that will be happening. Just so you can get a flavor of what that's like if you're into it.
You can find the information for that on the South Jersey Philadelphia X-Wing page. It is posted in there. But yeah, so we do know that PAX is going to be extended, so everything will go. If Wave 2 comes out prior to...
It has to be November 15th.
November 15th, right. And November 22nd... It
won't drop on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it won't drop on Thanksgiving. And then November 15th will be a good 10 days away from the 30th, which is the System Open Swiss.
Yep.
So
happy birthday, Marshall.
Oh, it's your birthday that day.
Yeah, that's my birthday. I'm really looking forward to going 2-4 on my birthday.
Oh, it's
going to
be great.
In the Swiss of a major tournament.
Oh, my God. We need a special birthday bounty for Marshall.
I know.
We'll think of that closer.
I'll buy you a cake if you table me.
Oh, that's great. So, but wait, if Wave 2 is out by, so each, they always come out on a Thursday. So if it's out by the 15th, then Wave 2 will absolutely be legal. If it comes out the day before on the 29th, then No dice. No wave two. It'll only be wave one with the extended format. Anything else about PAX? Okay, so...
We're going to get more into the meta.
Right, and one of the things I wanted to talk about is you should probably... I know it's about a month and a half out, but you should probably be starting to figure out what you want to fly. Even if it's not your finalized form, but you still want to, like... I wouldn't, like, switch my list around, like, at the last day, but, like, you want to start forming your own little habits and meta and learning all the tricks of the trade for that list that you have.
If you're taking PAX seriously, you should be, I think at this point, you should be, like, narrowing down what you want
to. Yeah. Start practicing Poe Dameron right now.
Right? That would be crazy if it does come out on the 15th and you're just
absolute insanity.
Oh my god, that would be crazy.
Audible.
So Friday it's the X-Wing System Open qualifying, and it says that you play six rounds of Swiss, and anyone who with five or more wins goes to a final on Saturday. So that feels like the old System Open.
Is the final on Saturday or is it Sunday?
Saturday. It says Saturday, yeah. And then for Saturday, it says players compete. It's called X-Wing Extended Qualifier. Players compete in a six-round Swiss tournament, and then there's a World Championship invite
for the winner. 6-0s.
Yeah, so it sounds like the Friday sounds like the System Open, like the old System Open, and the Saturday sounds like the old Hyperspace, because you had to win the Hyperspace qualifier to get an invite, whereas the top eight in the System Open got an invite to Coruscant.
So do we know if they're actually calling it a System Open, or is it?
It says System Open on the Cascade Games website.
Okay.
And then the Friday event costs $10 more than the Saturday event. So it feels like that's the main event, and Saturday is
like the Hyperspace qualifier or whatever.
Yeah. And then I know, I think someone from Cascade Games I think Gold Squadron is going to be interviewing someone from Cascade Games, but they haven't done it yet.
All right. Are they still doing the Hangar Bay side tournament?
Yes.
Yeah.
They actually have a couple of themes to them now, where I know, like, the Battle of Yavin's one of the themes.
There's a team one, I think.
There's, like, a team Hangar Bay. So it looks like there's going to be a good amount of side events. PAX, like, in general, like, it looks like it's almost doubled in size this year. So if you're thinking about coming and, like, maybe, like, X-Wing... You're just thinking about X-Wing, like, the amount of events that they added compared to last year, like, is tremendous. Like, they're not sharing the convention center this year, and they have the entire place to themselves. So if you're thinking about coming, like, definitely do it. It's such a fun time.
I mean, just the list of Cascade Games events for PAX is kind of gigantic. With L5R, Destiny, Pokemon, Keyforge, I don't even know what half these games are. Killer Bunnies, Shards of Infinity, Ascension, Past the Pandas, Battle Kittens.
That's crazy. I'm really, I kind of want to check out Keyforge, I'm not going to lie.
I kind of want to check out Keyforge, too. Let's play Keyforge.
We are now the Liberty Squadron Keyforge podcast.
Liberty Forge.
Nice. All right, so that's PAX. Come. I'm trying to prep as much swag to give out, so we will talk about that a little bit closer. We still have a bunch of stuff that we have to work out. So come to PAX. It's going to be a fun time.
Andrew, are we going to have an after party?
I'm thinking about it.
We should figure that out.
Saturday might be better because if, you know, people are making the cut, they probably aren't going to want to go out Friday night, so we can try to figure that out.
Yeah, I'll probably have my son with me on Saturday. That's all right.
I mean, we can just get him drunk. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Daddy said it's okay.
I mean, no one will write him out.
Yeah, yeah, it's fine. Okay, watch. You'll make the cut on Saturday, and then...
Yeah, then you'll really be in trouble.
I'll take care of... I won't make the cut, so I'll take care of your son, and then me and him will go get drinks.
Oh, he won't make the cut, and we'll just hang out with John.
He could comment on stream with you. Are we going to stream?
We are probably not. I know. I have some highly personal things that I just don't have the time to take care of a stream as well. So, but Gold Squadron.
That's like right near your wedding, isn't it?
Yeah. It's literally married, the next week. So I don't want to have to too much pressure of that if I have to like dip out for at any point. So, but I know
I got married the week before PAX last
night. Nice.
Week,
so.
Yeah. So, oh man, and you still made it. That's great.
I did make it. Yeah.
But we do know.
So you have to fight at your wedding, you're saying, Andrew.
Maybe. Let's see if I'm allowed out past like 8 o'clock. So yeah, we'll I'll look into a PAX party though. We can try to figure something out, but I don't think we're gonna be able to stream just for like commitment purposes. I don't want to commit to streaming and then not be able to fulfill that. But yeah, so like I said, we're gonna have a good amount of swag. This is our like home big tournament, and I want to make sure everyone feels welcome and goes with a bunch of stuff. All right, let's jump into the meta analysis. We are going to talk about just general Draea Swarm. Brian's list, I would say, is a very similar variant of the Draea Swarm. And we're going to pit it up against a Shuttle Aces, which was Will's list from the group championship. So, Brian, do you want to talk about your list a little bit on how it works and like what it benefits from and like how you decked Draea out?
Sure. So, Draea Ranthal's ability, if you haven't looked it up, is... if a non-limited ship fires at an enemy in your firing arc, it gets to reroll one dice. So to nitpick all the stuff here, your arc extends in any weapon you have, including turrets, from range 0 to range 3. And if any of your ships, or any of your generic ships, shoots at an enemy in that widespread that Draea is putting out, they get to reroll a dice, which is nice. You know, passive mods like Predator from 1.0. But I really like this list, and I threw it with three Fang Fighters at PS1, the Zealous Recruit. But after a while, it does feel like there is a limit to how much you can get out of that. It, you know, pigeonholes you a little bit to just flying a lot of generics. So you better really like those generics. And the list of choices is not terribly huge. So Draea herself clocks in at, I want to have this up, at 40 points before upgrades, but you really need to give her a turret so that, you know, she has a full 180 degrees from range 0 to range 3 of you get a free reroll with all your other ships. But all your other ships are generics, and you want, you know, to fit 3 or 4 to maximize most of the ability. That limits you to quite a few ships, like Karax, two dice ships, which I personally don't favor too much, but we're going to have to try them anyway, and Fangs, which I really like, but, you know, how many times can you fly Fangs?
A lot.
But a lot, apparently, right? So you have to like the generics that you're flying a lot, and you enhance them and make them better. But, you know, looking at all the scum generics, they don't have things like X-Wings, which might be a little bit more bang for your buck for, you know, three attack dice and a little meaty and has some options. You have to, you know, pick through all the scum and see, like, would I want to fly three or four of these? Because the other answer is, if I just fly one random, like if I just flew, you know, one Cuman Hela fighter and one Karax fighter and one tugboat, they all fly with different dials. They all have different requirements. And having to manage all those on the fly makes the swarm maybe that much more difficult to manage. You know what I mean? Because you have to keep three dials in mind rather than one dial applied to three ships, like when I fly three Fangs. Secondly, we're going to move on to Draea. There are two ways to build Draea. So a lot of the ones that I see with seven ships, like we mentioned before, William Hagwood at Coruscant flew, Draea with a turret is 44 points. It's very cheap. Leaves you a lot of room for other ships, up to six. I flew Draea very heavily upgraded so that she would contribute more to the fight or be harder to take down. So to begin with, gave her Han Solo because, you know, everybody flies Han Solo in a scum list nowadays. And proton torpedoes. So if you don't shoot a Draea, I have an option to torpedo you, which I have like done to Max. Sorry, done to Rob Kaiser. Will in the finals. Alternatively, she also has an illicit slot. And so I give her a cloaking device and a hull upgrade because hull upgrades, you know, super cheap. I have 3 points to fill. It makes it that much tougher to kill. It has come up on several occasions where everyone always forgets that Draea has hull upgrade. So I have to remember that Draea has a hull upgrade so I don't take her off the ship, off the board before she dies. And combining cloaking device with Han Solo allows me to, at PS4, cloak and immediately focus, and suddenly she's hard to take down, you know, like Sunter Fell with 9 hits to go down. So I like this version where she's not just sitting there firing 2 dice at you and being a mod, which is obviously she's a huge target. In this version, she's a target, but if you commit to her, then I also have the ability to cloak and punish you for committing to her too hard because now she can tank things really hard. Sorry for rambling so much.
No, you're fine. So at the group championship, I also flew a Drea swarm, but it was Drea with three of the freighter captain YTs, which what you were talking about, like the two dice ship, which you weren't a fan of, which probably was my downfall because the two dice just seemed like they didn't push through damage at all. I mean, granted, I only had three of them, and like something with a Z swarm where you can get another three ships in there at two dice might have been a little bit better just to push down that damage. But I could see where this definitely benefits, especially with those three dice attacks.
Next, we're going to go over like the shuttle aces. With Will's list for the group championship, I know we talked about it last week, was Lieutenant Sai with the title, and then it was a naked Soon Tier Fell, and Darth Vader at bringing it into 200 points, but Darth Vader had...
He had Sense.
Sense, and did he have Afterburners?
Yes.
And Fire Control.
And Fire Control, and then he had Advanced Sensors on Sai. Which, okay, so Will's list, he kind of seemed a little jazzy with it. The Lambda Shuttle did a lot of work, and I don't think people expected the Lambda Shuttle to do as much as it did, but almost every single game that I saw Will play, he had one of his aces just kind of pop. And then the other ace, like, almost cleaned up the entire field. Brian, do you have any experience with this?
Yeah, so I actually played Will twice. And sadly, I won the first game and lost the second. But also, strangely, in the opening joust, I had lost really badly to Will in the first game. And then won that game somehow after immediately losing one of my ships. And in the second one, we jousted. I made that kill box we talked about, like against Rob. And I blew up Vader in one round, but then proceeded to just lose to Soon Tier Fell.
Right. And now, do you think, like, all right, so, like, how, like, versatile do you see, like, that shuttle being? Like, you might have blown up Soon Tier Fell, but then did, like, the shuttle, was that able to push through the damage and give the amount of, like, support to Vader that he needed?
So I'm a little bit love-hate relationship with that shuttle. It is kind of effective because, you know, with Sai, you're effectively getting three actions for the price of one, and it can fairly get okay shots with its back arc. It was particularly good against the Fangs because the Fang Fighters don't get their ship ability from the rear arc with the Lambda. So surprisingly, the two dice out of the back is more effective than three dice out of the front, which is a little strange. And Lieutenant Sai with advanced sensors is a little bit of a nombo. You want the ability to move, sorry, do the action before you move, but then he doesn't get to perform his focus if he advanced sensors. So a little love hate there.
Yeah. All right. So Jonathan, now you had you played the Vader and Rexlar. Was that your first game yesterday playing that?
It actually was. Yes.
Okay. So, but you can kind of like, you know, see how this could be like similar to that, where you have like these two aces moving last and against something like a swarm. Like, do you think that like an ace like Vader or Soon Tier could just literally arc dodge and clean up an entire swarm like that? Or do you think that the swarm might have the advantage in this?
I mean, I think pre-maneuver movement. All right, so being able to boost or barrel roll before you reveal your dial is extremely powerful. So for Will's list, being able to advance sensors, let's say a barrel roll on Soon Tier Fell, which I remember him doing in his game against Zach a couple of times, like being able to have Soon Tier barrel roll or boost, and then he would and then reveal a blue move was extremely powerful. I think that in Rexlar, you know, with or any defender with advanced sensors, it's also extremely powerful. I mean, yes, you lose the full throttle ability, but in our game yesterday, there were multiple times where you put in the right move, and then I was just like, okay, instead of going right into your trap, I will go this way and just boost the other way. Because I would say I could either, so I would think when I was putting in my moves, I was like, okay, I could boost left, I could boost right. This move works either way. You know? So, and
yeah, one of the things,
super powerful.
All right, so yeah, one of the things I do notice a lot is like lists like that require a lot of patience, where like you just said it, like I dialed in the right move. I had the lower PS or initiative than you, and like there was really not much I could do. Where if you weren't as patient as you were, then you could literally just like you would charge in, which you obviously didn't do. And it, like if you have that patience, then you can be like, okay, I don't need to engage this turn. I can kind of take that turn away with the advanced sensors and engage on a more, wait for me to mess up or wait for a more favorable engagement where you know you're not going to, you know, get as much damage pushed in on your ship as that other engagement would be.
Yeah, I agree. Like playing aces requires more fewer ship lists, like a two ship list requires more patience. I mean, yesterday when we were playing, there was definitely a time when I was thinking about, you had correctly called that I was going to bring Rexler in. That had been my original plan, to bring him in, where you had your Fang fighters aimed at me. And then I was like, you know, it would have probably been, I could have brought him in. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do this. And then I boosted away and then still did the three hard and then ended up like circling around that rock, if you remember.
Right.
So I just delayed the engagement by another turn to make it more favorable. The thing is, like, the fact that those small ships give up half points, though, you have to be so much more careful. And I have to admit, like, normally I'm not such a patient player. I like to just, like, sort of fly towards things and shoot them. So it took a lot of extra, like, all right, I'm going to run, I'm going to turn around. So I think, like, with ace play, I think that being able to coordinate an ace before the ace moves is super powerful. And especially, like, for Soontir specifically, so Sai... Will would have Sai give a focus to Soontir, and then Soontir could use auto thrusters to reposition, give a focus back to Sai, and then when Soontir revealed his dial, he almost always had a two bank dialed in. He'd clear the stress and then be able to do his regular move.
Yeah,
so super powerful.
Right. Well,
maybe
okay.
Maybe too good.
So with the counterpoint to like the with a Drea swarm or something like that, I know. You're not really supposed to. You actually said this yesterday. Thank you for not fortressing, because my final salvo dice would have been 11 to your 5. Yeah. So, but I think at the same time, this swarm almost would take a similar patience to it, where you are going to notice more advanced players are going to try to draw you through the debris field and the asteroid field. And at the same time, you really want to take the time and look at where your kill box is going to be and how you can draw those aces into it. So I know yesterday I did a terrible job at that. I was just, let's chase Vader down as fast as I can. But I think at the same time, as much like you might almost want to kind of do that nonchalant fortress where you, if you don't have that engagement, just turn around and go back. Like it's deadly. And if, like, for a competitive play, like, that might be the right play to do, is if you see them going the other way, they want you to chase them. They want you to break your formation. And I know I said this yesterday, is just, I would have been better off if I would have just went forward and then Kay turned back and then made you come to me as opposed to me chasing you through that debris field.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point.
Yeah. Anything, Brian or Marshall? So okay. let's say, from all the metas we've talked about, which of these two metas do you think you'd rather bring into? I mean, Brian, I don't know if you'd change your list up at all, but would you rather take a shuttle ace list or would you rather take a like swarm list?
I tend to favor, you know, more ships on the board. Maybe not the same type of swarm. Maybe, you know, four ships might be a little bit. So a swarm might be a little bit of a generous term for four ships.
Right.
But I like having more ships in the field, more resources on the field.
And the other thing about this, with lower pilot skill and more ships in the field, is that they are not as highly costed. So if you do get half points on them, like if I would have got half points on Vader, that's almost two full of those Fang fighters.
Yep.
So it's kind of like there's those benefits there. But the amount of information that you can see from these shuttles or the aces is kind of crazy. I don't know. I think I'm going to try out some of these aces.
Yeah, I've been doing Soontir, Whisper, and Sai for a while, and it's a lot of fun. I still don't have the upgrades like totally down. I need to fiddle around with like what the crew on Sai is, and do I put Vader on Whisper? Do I put him on Sai or whatever? So I'm getting pretty close on it, but that's. I think that might be sort of what I take to PAX.
All right, so we hope you guys enjoyed that. Brian, since you're our guest, do you have a beginner tip that you'd like to talk about this week?
Sure. The thing that I feel doesn't get addressed a lot that I think can really help people out is rock placement. I see a lot of people, even on like high tables, don't like at our group champs, didn't really think too much about rock placement. Shout out to Rob, great guy, great player too. But when we deployed rocks, we deployed them just, you know, three rocks lined up as close as possible to his deployment and three rocks up against mine. And again, that's the decision for the right decision for one list. And I think that's the right decision for a list that like to joust. So, you know, without getting too much into game theory and like, you know, all these angles that you pull about these rocks, just think, is your list more maneuverable or less maneuverable than your opponent's? If it's less maneuverable, you probably want wide open spaces so you can make whatever move you want and joust and set up, you know, the right approach angle or net that you want. So think, when your opponent deploys their rock, I like to just deploy my rock straight behind it or straight in front of it so that it leaves me room to fly straight at him in as many lanes as possible, or fly sideways across the board in as many lanes as possible. If I'm playing aces and my opponent's playing jousting, I'll maybe, you know, set up maybe more of a diagonal so that the rocks are more spread out and maybe one ship maximum can fly through each lane through the asteroid field at a time so that I can force them to split up more.
Nice. Cool. Yeah, we don't hear too many about rock placement. It's definitely a huge part of the game that people just completely overlook.
I did it a lot. 2 years ago when I won the group champs, I placed float against defenders three times. And two of those times, my opponent was nice enough to just deploy three rocks on the side. So literally it was the most open board possible. And we flew at each other and I won the joust.
Nice.
And it worked really good. So, you know, just be careful with your rocks. There are another resource that you have at your disposal.
Now, at that group, you were flying a TIE Swarm versus pre-nerf defenders.
Yes.
That was a very impressive win.
Oh, thank you.
All right, so let's close out this episode. Brian, do you have any shout-outs since you're a guest?
Yeah, shout-out to Rob Kaiser. Very lovely opponent. Great guy. Flies really smart. Cool. Thanks for letting me be here. We know we harp on him a lot, but it was really fun, and he's a great guy. And thanks for letting me be here, Rob, and you guys as well.
Nice. Yeah, thanks for coming on. You were our first bounty claim, basically, so far, so... Congratulations.
Yeah, I haven't had to buy anyone a sandwich.
I'm sure that will happen. Yeah, Marshall, do you have anything? You want to shout out to Wawa?
Yeah. shout out to Wawa for having good sandwiches. I guess.
Yeah, every Tuesday, Marshall comes into the store with the Wawa hoagie, and I'm just like, damn it. Why didn't I stop?
It is my weird Tuesday night ritual. All
right. Jonathan, you got stuff, right?
Yeah, so there are, I believe, 28 active English language X-Wing podcasts right now, and I want to shout out two of them specifically. So one of them is Back to Dials. So Back to Dials has in Colorado, there is a tournament coming up called the Walker Classic, and there is a charity event called Mandalorian Mayhem, and the Liberty Squadron podcast is the official sponsor of the Back to Dials entry in Mandalorian Mayhem at the Walker Classic. So, yeah, so we get to sponsor our friends at Back to Dials, and we get to fight cancer, so win-win. Also, I want to shout out a new podcast I've been listening to. It is the Inland Empire Aces. So they're based out of California and Southern California, those not Minot territory, but east of that, like between Vegas and LA, that's the Inland Empire, and... my parents used to live in Riverside, which is in the Inland. This podcast, they've had 3-4 episodes. They're pretty good. They're very good. And I'd like to shout them out, and I'd say give them a listen.
Nice. All right. Well, I think that does it for this week's episode. I want to thank everyone for listening, and get out there and fly something. All right. All right. Bye, guys.
Have a good night.